This episode is brought to you by Adobe XD. Adobe XD is the collaborative platform for experienced designers to design and prototype engaging user experiences. Stay tuned to hear how XD helped me make a product I'd been trying to get greenlit for nearly 4 years possible. Yes, 4 years.
Someone needs to be the writer. I think it's a designer's job to know who that person is, to be aware of it, to advocate for that. Hey, I'm the designer on this. This thing needs words. Who's the writer? Is it me? Is there someone else? Is it the client? Do I have that person's phone number? And can I start inviting them to meetings so that we can start collaborating right now?
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Well, greetings, User Defenders. Heaven knows why I'm recording this at 5 in the morning before coffee, but I know it's because I'm behind, and I need to get this to Darren so he can do the show notes. So if my voice sounds a little less enthusiastic than normal, that's probably why. Anyway, I wanted to tell you that this episode's a day, this is a special one. I've never directly discussed UX writing on User Defenders before, and it's kind of one of those buzzwords in our field, but it's really because it's such an up-and-coming and uprising craft that I'm glad, because it's really been there's been a lot of ambiguity around this subject matter before. So I am doing this episode today with Scott Kuby, who is the author of the new A Book Apart released Writing for Designers. So we talk all about his book today. And some of the topics we discuss are lorem ipsum. Should we say rest in peace or not? And writing. Whose job is it anyway? There's so much more to glean in the upcoming moments. Before we do that, I want to remind you that UD Community is live, and I wanted to invite you to check it out and join 500 other defenders like you who are passionate about fighting for the users and changing the world through good design. I always say, let's get better together, because we're better together. Check it out at community.userdefenders.com. And please enjoy this special episode all about UX writing with my special guest, Scott Kuby. And I'm going to get some coffee now. Bye. Bye for now. Enjoy. Scott Kuby is the lead content strategist at Brain Traffic and the author of Writing for Designers from A Book Apart. He can be found online at kuby.co and in person at various grungy rock clubs around the Twin Cities. I love that. Since 2010, Scott has delivered over 60 public talks and workshops on writing, content strategy, and user experience design to audiences of designers, developers, artists, makers, and more. That is awesome. And his academic career was marked by several superlatives for best hair. Welcome to User Defender, Scott. I am super excited to have you on the show today.
Happy to be here, Jason. Thanks for having me.
I loved your fun fact. Do you still get comments on your hair?
I do. I was just remarking to a friend last night. So this is I'm going deeply personal right out the gate. I hope that's okay.
Oh, please.
So when I'm at my heaviest and have a big beard, which is, you know, that's a weight that I can be at, that's a look I can have, people will tell me that I look like Zach Galifianakis, which, you know, I just take as a compliment. He's a funny man. And when it's like, it's summer and the sun's been out and I'm fit and I'm shaved and the hair's back, I get Bradley Cooper, which I think is mostly, again, for the hair. So there's a lot to it, but I'm always experimenting with it. I have a beard, and then I go to a conference and I've shaved it off in between, and I forget that I gave the conference a bearded photo of me, so then no one recognizes me. And I start to get bummed because, like, none of my, you know, old conference friends are coming up and saying hi. And it's like, oh, wait, they don't recognize me. So, yeah, it's people like to comment. So I just, you know, it gives them pleasure. So I just roll with it. If people like to talk about my hair,
that's great. It's fine by me. Hey, Bradley Cooper, that's not a bad one. That's not,
I'm
a bad,
not complaining.
He's pretty easy on the eyes, if we're being honest. So this is awesome. I'm so excited to have you on the show, Scott. I've never really specifically had an entire episode dedicated to writing and the importance of it, especially as a designer, and UX writing is sort of one of the newer buzzwords in our field. I want to talk about this, you know, and just even in the opening lines of your book, you say something really interesting. You say, crap, the writing. But you use another word. It's a family show, so I'm.
You say, you know, it's. I kept waiting to get notes on that, and I never did. So I just, let it go.
Go with it, man. Use your voice. That's what I loved. You totally brought your voice into this too. It was really fun. Fun to read.
Yeah. It's Well, that, I mean, that's where the conversation often starts, and I think being at Brain Traffic, where I do content strategy work too, you know, you can. There are complexities on complexities around the problem, but very often the root problem for folks that are struggling with content is it's, you know, we have a lot of writing that needs to get done, and it's not done. And the people that need to do it don't maybe feel up to the task, or they have their own work, and so it's not on the top of their stack. And it just, it all spirals out from there. And there's a lot of, there's numerous whole disciplines, you know, content strategy included, UX writing included, that you know, are addressing the various symptoms of that, but it's a big problem in organizations.
Yeah, it really is, and I can't wait to learn more about kind of how to sort of become a better writer and sort of like how a writer kind of fits into the design process. So I'm definitely excited to dive into that. But you said something interesting. You said we forgot about the writing. You know, and you just touched on it, but as you so eloquently communicate in your book, you know, designs depend on words. And if that's true, and it is, why do we tend to forget about the writing so often?
Yeah, you know, I think, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think sometimes forgetting is maybe a kind way to put it, right? I think there's, it's often an uncomfortable truth that we are somewhat intentionally deceiving ourselves into not acknowledging, right? Every time you put down a bit of fake text, right, if you're putting in some lorem ipsum or some content goes here, or copying and pasting song lyrics as I've done in the past, or drawing in squiggles, you know, it's like anyone knows. Okay, what I could have done here was write something, and instead what I did was draw squiggles, or put in fake text, and but you know, nothing immediately happens. Alarms don't go off when you do that, right? The content police don't come bursting down your door when you use fake text and lorem ipsum. And there are even appropriate moments to do that in one's own writing process. But as organizations, I think I'm honestly not sure the root cause, but there's sort of this mass delusion that takes place where everyone is looking at this fake text and through unspoken agreement kind of just pretends that it's real text. Right. We sort of like, I have an idea of what could go here. And really, I just wanted to look at the design anyway. And so that becomes, as I said, this shared delusion. And it's something that very much snowballs. Right. Well, if we didn't write this text because we want to wait until the writer can get their hands on it. I mean, no reason to write this text. And well, you know what? I think the writer could probably do a better job with this bit of copy here. So I'm going to leave that as I'm going to leave that one blank. And it adds up and adds up and adds up. Yeah. And the real problem there is many designers have probably experienced, you know, one or two TBAs, one or two comes in a mock-up of like, I'm struggling. I can't quite find the words here. I need to get some help with it. That's not going to sink your project, but choosing the words, writing the words, that's a design decision that has implications for the rest of the design. And so the more of those unknowns that stack up exponentially, the less done the design gets and the harder it becomes to write those words. So yeah, long way around, but I think the answer to the question is people are deluding themselves because it's to a certain extent, it's a scary thing. It's really scary to just look directly and acknowledge how much work there is still yet to do.
And you started touching on lorem ipsum, and that is definitely a go-to for designers in kind of filling in, like, imagine this is where text would go in their designs. Now, what's wrong with lorem ipsum? What are the problems, the inherent problems you've seen with it?
So I tend to kind of fall in the middle on the lorem ipsum debate. So the one thing I've started to push back a bit on is the idea that it's toxic, right? That it's immediately poisonous and no one should ever use it, right? Never use lorem ipsum. Lorem ipsum is killing your designs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
As an individual writer and designer, I find it useful. I like to see the shape of a thing before I write it, right? So if you know, if I am writing something in the style of maybe kind of a persuasive letter, right? You know, that sort of like letter from Jeff Bezos when you open up Amazon and they do the memo style thing. Well, a letter has a certain silhouette. It's going to have a certain number of paragraphs and it's going to have an intro and a conclusion and a PS. And in my own writing and design, I think like sketching that out with lorem ipsum helps me get a better feel for it. So I think that's perfectly fine. Where lorem ipsum becomes a problem, and the big problem with it is, as I alluded to earlier, when it becomes part of our design process. So part of a personal designer's workflow, if it helps you get the writing work done, use it, use squiggles, whatever helps you get the writing done, do it. But if you take it to a design review, you take it to a critique, God forbid it goes up for quote-unquote approval, you know, with fake text in it. I mean, what are we approving, right? That's what always becomes kind of funny to me.
That's a good point, because the design could change depending on what the final text, and often it will change depending on what the final text is, right?
Very much so. Very much so. Yeah, and it can change, and also the thing about lorem ipsum and other placeholders is they're not reality, and so. Yeah. Anyone on that conversation, anyone in that review is substituting their own imagination for it. So people, you know, the people in the room looking at lorem ipsum are not aligned on what goes there, because it's nonsense. It's purposefully nonsense. And so pretending that we have agreed that this is the design is just, it's patently untrue. There's no way that you can have that agreement, because you were looking at something that's going to change.
That's an interesting point. And I feel like when we do, and I've done this many times, and I've been in meetings where the client has actually been thrown off by lorem ipsum, where they've actually been super distracted by it. But then you just think, like, what are we really, you just said it, what are we getting approval on? Is it just the visual aesthetic? Is it just the visual elements? If so, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's all right to use it in that case. But I think that, you know, as UX has evolved so much, even like with sprint processes and stuff like that, like it's more about like the problem being solved. And I feel like maybe this is sort of like another one of those evolutions as designers that we all need to kind of figure out a better process to present really more, less along the lines of the visual aspects, you know, unless you're doing a work for like Ogilvy, David Ogilvy or something like that. But like, you know, in this medium, it's, I think we need to really to present more of the problem being solved than you know, and then the visual elements are kind of the runner up to things.
Absolutely.
Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah. The way I often think about it is that lorem ipsum is a tool. It's a design tool, and tools are neutral, but some tools are much more dangerous than others, right? So I did a lot of stagecraft in high school and a little bit in college for the theater productions. And the freshmen, you know, coming in who were new and a little more green, we could certainly let them use a drill, right? That's not the most dangerous of tools. Maybe with a few hours under their belt, we'd let them use the chop saw. But even I was not allowed as a student individually to go in and use the table saw. We had to do that with the teacher's assistants, you know, and I was just kind of handing him things, because table saws are dangerous as heck. So, you know, but they're also incredibly powerful in the right hands, and it's a very useful tool. So I think lorem ipsum is one of those very dangerous tools. And as you said, could you have lorem ipsum in and have a meeting where you review and approve, or at least give the go-ahead on some visual elements? You can, and that requires an incredibly disciplined process, and it requires an incredibly competent facilitator, which is a whole other area of design skill that is I think often undervalued alongside writing, is facilitation. So if you can make it incredibly clear to everyone on the meeting that what we're doing today is, you know, approving the general aesthetic approach to this area, because it's going to be too difficult to go back and redo it, you know, I'd be very cautious about that, but I think that's doable in the right organization with the right people. But you have to be really explicit about it. And again, you have to make incredibly clear what is it we're actually agreeing on right now today in this room.
Hmm. Yeah. So as a designer, you know, in the earlier days of the web, we all used waterfall process at that time. That was just kind of how we did things. So it's like the bid comes in. Well, we do some mock-ups, right? And again, probably using lorem ipsum, and present it to the client. Oh, great. I like the way that looks. Okay. See you in a year as we build this thing, right? I mean, that's right, how it worked. Right. I'll see you next year. But, you know, so certainly, and I'm glad things have evolved a lot to where, you know, we have a lot more of an agile design process typically in the field. But, you know, we'd have an easy out back then if we're running behind on a deliverable. What was that? Well, the client hasn't provided the copy, right? This field and its roles have evolved so much. It feels like designers are almost expected to code and developers are expected to design. Are designers also expected to be writers now? In other words, whose job is it anyway?
Yeah. So answering that, I love that question, Jason, because answering that question, I think, is one of the first important things that organizations and teams need to do to get the writing done. Hmm. And one of the things that I strongly recommend in writing for designers is that the role of writer be made explicit for any given assignment. And that's another idea I shape out in the book. But take something like a whole website overhaul, right? So you're redesigning the client's website. You're totally relaunching it. You've had this date in mind for months or even a year. There's tons, dozens and dozens of pages of content. That's something that can be reasonably easily scoped out through a content inventory or content matrix document. The interactive flows, you know, all the things should have be well inventoried and project managed. And anything that needs writing should have a writer assigned. Now, whom the writer should be depends on the organization, depends on the resources, depends on the skill set, etc. So step one is assigning a writer, deciding who the writer is. Is it the designer? Is it a writer that's resourced to multiple teams? Is it this beautiful fantasy land where there's a dedicated UX writer, you know, for every design team? That'd be really nice.
Yes.
But you need to know it. So that's step one. But then just by assigning the writer, the funny thing is you don't actually know anything yet. So step two is you have to articulate what it means to be the writer on the assignment. And something that I am advocating for in organizations, and especially for individual designers to think about a little bit, is that being the writer does not necessarily have to mean I and I alone, as the writer, am responsible for typing out of nothing brand new text to grammatical perfection for this design. Right? Writing to me just has to mean owning the text in the design. Often in an organization, being the writer, especially if you have an established design system, if the organization or the product has been propped up for many years, sometimes the writing work doesn't involve any new words at all. It's finding relevant text in a copy deck. It's borrowing patterns and language about sign-ins or resets or, you know, product descriptions or whatever have you from other projects. And it's just sort of like a role of shepherding or stewarding the text. Now, it could involve writing. And one way to think about it, too, and a popular thing with UX writers increasingly is sort of doing proto-copy, right? So just taking the designer is going to take their best shot at writing something, knowing that there's another step in the process where they will review that text with an editor who can refine it, or maybe there's a UX writer who sort of collaborates with designers on previously written proto-copy to refine it. But however a team shakes it out, I think to your question, the important thing is that someone needs to be the writer. And I think it's a designer's job to know who that person is, to be aware of it, to advocate for that. Hey, I'm the designer on this. This thing needs words. Who's the writer? Is it me? Is there someone else? Is it the client? Do I have that person's phone number? And can I start inviting them to meetings so that we can start collaborating right now?
Oh, that's really great input. And I was thinking about sort of the deliverable of the, you know, the kind of the design review, perhaps with the client or with the stakeholders and such. And I'm wondering, like, about how we can kind of do this where it's the lorem ipsum's going to kind of throw them off, but we got to deliver this dang thing, right? Like, we got to show them something. Like, I think you talk about a concept in your book called the rough in. I think that was brilliant. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. So the idea there is to take all of your inputs, and inputs being potentially protocopy that you've written, so kind of lo-fi, not polished text, put that directly into the document. If you have quotes or customer testimonials, maybe you have a few options for what the headline should be. But just sort of gathering what you have and kind of almost collage style, like sort of layering that onto your design canvas. And the idea being is that it's intentionally going to look a little rough, right? We don't want this to look like a polished mock-up.
Sure, because that could throw the client off too, right?
That's exactly. Yeah. That's going to throw the client off as well. And it invites a little bit of collaboration. Mm. I'm loath to do group writing during a call. I've had to step in that role before to solve a problem of like, you know what, fine, let me share my screen, let me open up Word, and let me just start typing things as you talk. I don't find that especially efficient. But I do, you know, sort of almost in like the, you know, maybe like a vision test sort of way. You put a few options on the canvas, and instead of showing like multiple fully polished complete mock-ups, right? Here's version A of the design. Here's version B of the design. Here's version C of the design. Mm. The design is the design, but you could put version A, B, and C for the headline right on the canvas, you know, and just kind of have that all messy and layered on. Mm. So the rough-in is one idea. I think as an individual designer, the best way to do that, and when I worked as a UX writer supporting a team of UX designers, I just begged them. I begged them, please write something, write literally anything. You know, I don't care how bad it is, but if you make an attempt to just describe, even in like a detached sort of voice, right? Like, this button will make the user log out of the service, sure, right? Just tell me what's happening with language as opposed to leaving it implied with the design elements. That's a much more efficient collaboration.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like the rough in for getting there. Another concept I've started talking about recently is pink protocopy. So I've yet to work on a brand where pink is one of the like actual design colors. It's very intense. And so that's, as an alternative to lorem ipsum, something that I often do is I put in draft text, but I make it obnoxiously neon pink. Hmm. And then I put at the top of the document in big, bright pink letters, draft copy, and maybe some notes about that. But still having words that get us closer to a done design, as opposed to putting in beautifully typeset black nonsense, which is the lorem ipsum.
That's so good. And I was thinking about, you touched on this just a minute ago about kind of leaving it open for collaboration. Because even if it is, you know, like you mentioned too, which is super important advice, like make the role explicit for each given project, because it could change, and it very well will. But I like how you kind of talk in the book about collaboration of writing, and, you know, because there's a lot of research involved, right, too. Like, you can't just write, like you said, just out of thin air of something you know nothing about. So I think that what I'm getting at is, you talk about, you know, the approval process. I'm probably jumping a little ahead here, but I feel like it's a good time to mention this about the whole swoop and poop. You know, like, it's, you know, and I loved how you addressed that, because it's, you know, the client or stakeholder or whatever is less likely to crap on your work if they're a part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is so inexpensive to involve stakeholders and others in the organization in the writing process. You don't need any special skills for it. It's not a costly sort of workshop. You know, folks don't have to be signed into any special applications to do it. It's mostly driven by conversations. Mm. And as I said, showing people some options. So, you know, there are, you can do that as simply as just like an interview. An interview is a fantastic way to do it. I think especially if you are using some form of visual note-taking, visual recording of the conversation. So if I'm explicitly talking to a stakeholder to get their input toward writing something, I like to reflect back what I'm capturing of what they're saying as they're saying it. I think that's a nice technique to use in any circumstance, but I think especially in writing, because they can sort of see, I said some words out loud, I now see on the screen reflected back to me that you captured those words. And that, I think, plants a little seed so that when the stakeholder later is looking at the design, it feels familiar, even if maybe it's not actually in their words, right?
Right.
You may have changed it. You may have used that as an input. But they're part of the process, and they, you know, you feel they can feel a little bit of that evolution. And that can be a really powerful thing.
So I've been trying to get an internal product built for nearly 4 years now. Don't ask. And it finally got greenlit recently. The kicker? Due to a large business pivot on the IT side, the dev team has a very limited time window to build out the MVP. Well, thanks to Adobe XD, I already had the blueprints. I was able to quickly design, test, and gather feedback on my prototypes before the business decision was even made. So the next time your stakeholders or engineers like Howard Hughes say, "Show me all the blueprints," you can confidently fire up Adobe XD and say, "Here they are." Don't wait 4 years. Download XD for free and experience design already ahead of its time at userdefenders.com/XD.
Ah, that's great. Yeah, and when you make it better, they can kind of feel like, oh, wow, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the funny thing too is like I fall victim to this. I think a lot of designers fall victim to this of, you know, we are the geniuses. We are the smart people who know how design works and how UX writing works and all of this. I got to tell you, when I am on top of my game and I'm running a project really well and I don't have my defenses up and can just really engage with business leaders and stakeholders and, you know, other members of the design team in the organization, there are plenty of fantastic writers and designers and marketers and people with creative ideas all over organizations. They're working in customer service. They're working in sales. They're working in marketing. Some of the best quote-unquote writing that I've done on projects, you know, the hook line, the big idea did not come from me. It came from someone else.
Wow.
And I think if you... are, you know, that to me ties back to the idea of the writer role not being the person who is the foremost expert on words and has to type everything out new from their brain, but just as the steward of the copy on a project. They're the person who's going to get the writing done. That's what the writer's role is. And there are plenty of good books, anthologies, things out in the world that the person who wrote the book did very little original writing, right? They curated interviews, they researched things, they talked to lots of people, and we think of those people as writers, so I don't see any reason that can't be the case on design projects.
I love that, and it's, again, that whole inclusive idea here, but we can make better work when we involve more people because, you know, more heads are better than one and, you know, more perspectives especially. And I was thinking too about involving the client, who knows their product and business better than them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And involving the client and into this, the spirit of this show, I think everything I just said, I would say again, and replace stakeholders with users, right? I mean, same idea.
Interesting.
Like you can be collaborating with users. There are teams that use pair writing processes with members of the product community. You can do those same kinds of interviews with people and get lots of, I talk about this idea of inputs a lot, but that's very important to my own writing process. And it's something that I would encourage designers to think more about is to me, gathering inputs is where the bulk of the work should be and is much more productive than sitting and staring at a blank page, right? So if you're sitting and staring at a blank page and you don't have anything to say, well, go talk to someone and then write down what they say. And now you've got a whole page of stuff to work from. And if that's no good, go talk to someone else. And now you've got two pages of stuff to work from. And if those interviews aren't good, go look at the competitors' sites and borrow a bunch of things from them as not to plagiarize, but as inputs, right? Like, how can I remix this? You hear a melody on the radio and you come home, you know, that was played on piano in a jingle, and you play it through guitar and you crank up your distortion pedal and no one will ever hear the where it came from. And now you've got your own song. So gathering those inputs, I think especially from users, can be an incredibly valuable part of that process.
Oh, it's so great. I'm wondering, Scott, in writing this book, are you hoping that more designers will become better writers, or that more companies will see the value of hiring a UX writer directly onto the team?
Man, I think either would be fantastic. Mm. I think as a matter of practicality, based on my experience, getting people already in a design role more comfortable with writing, and honestly getting people in business and marketing roles more comfortable with writing, is a lot more practical. I hope that in the, you know, like a decade from now, that, you know, as you said, UX writing is kind of seems like a term du jour. It's very trendy now. Mm-hmm. I think for good reason. People are recognizing the need for it. It's a community that's starting to come together. So I hope that more and more people are focusing on that out of the gate and are able to build up years of experience so that then we can have lead and then senior and then junior UX writers. Right now, though, I think that there's probably, you know, if I'm a startup and I need to hire folks to just get my product built and built well as soon as possible, I'm probably interested in designers that have a writing competency more so than folks exclusively with a writing and communications background. Because I think some of the intricacies of design maybe take a little bit more time to get one's head wrapped around, right? Good communication is good communication. You can have decades of experience of that and still be completely lost and swimming in an interactive design project.
Mm. Yeah, and I want to add to about, you know, my question. My question kind of answered itself. I was hoping to kind of get some more context out of you, which I did, and I appreciate that. I just want to say, defenders listening, really, if you are a designer, which you are, or you are an aspiring one and you are on your way, I want to tell you that you, in order to be a great designer, you really, really need to be a good writer. You know, you don't have to be a great writer, but you need to be a good writer. And when you're a good writer, you can become a great writer. I feel like that is just so important, and it's so overlooked often, you know, and again, it's, you know, it's easy to kind of do the, you know, not my job award, you know, kind of in mm-hmm. doing this. But you know what? It only adds to your tool belt. It only adds to your, you know, your being coveted at companies. You know, the fact that you can and you have work that shows that you've actually been able to do some design and writing on the same project. It's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if this idea is resonating with folks or not, but something I'm starting to hear more people say, and I think is a really nice idea, is thinking about, like, there's writing, right? So, like, there's kind of this traditional idea that folks have of writing letters, writing business emails, writing stories. But there's also sort of an art of using words as a design material.
Yes.
And they're closely related. And if you are using words as design material, I think arguably at most moments that you are doing that, you could also describe what you're doing as writing. But I think it's an interesting lens, right? Designers, you know, there are plenty of designers out there that will be like, you know what, I feel really competent in this area, but my color theory is a little weak. And that's something that I could brush up on and get better with, right? Mm. Or maybe my color, I've got color theory nailed. My compositions are great, but I never really got all that comfortable with typesetting and you know, understanding fonts and typefaces. I think words can be a similar kind of area to build a competency with and start to master a little bit more. And if thinking about it as writing is scary because you are like, oh, I'm not a writer, I'm not, like, that's not me, I can sympathize with that. I hope you get over it at a certain point because you are a writer.
Yes.
But you know, but if thinking about words is just one of many materials like layout, composition, color, pacing, cadence, all these things that contribute to a design, is helpful, then, you know, maybe that's a useful lens. And just understanding that it's one more area of skill that you can build as a designer.
Mm, that's so good. Yeah, it's kind of like the whole thing. We're all designers, right? Like, it just matters. It depends on whether we're good or not at what we've done. And that means whether we've practiced enough. And I feel like we're all writers, too. We write emails every day. Mm-hmm. We write, you know, Facebook posts or Twitter tweets. You know, we do all this stuff every day. We're always writing. But I think it's just, you know, are we thinking about, you know, being the intentional craft of writing? And I think that's what your book is really doing. It did that for me. It really makes me want to take my writing to the next level and to become even better at it. And so, you know, and Zeldman says, I won't hire any designer who doesn't write. Zeldman can't be wrong.
I echo that. Yeah, and thank you, Jason. That's really nice to hear.
Absolutely.
Intention. I love that you mentioned intentional craft, because that is very much was very much my hope for the book, is that if, you know, there's a lot of guidance out there about what to write for the web and what to write in digital, right? You can find top 10 lists of, you know, things like use active voice and have short scannable headlines and make sure that paragraphs are only 60 to 70 words, you know, and some of this kind of advice around what to write for the web. Mm. But the actual like process of like, well, like, what do I do? How do I get started writing? And then what do I do next? And then what do I do next is that's not an area that a lot of designers especially have experience in. And being intentional about it, just having a little conversation with yourself of how am I going to get this writing done? What will that mean? Is absolutely going to lead to a better project and better outcomes. And that's without getting any better at the quote unquote writerly stuff, right? That's not about going out and studying grammar and learning what participles are and reading Strunk and White and studying style guides. That's just about being intentional about your craft, as you say. And in my experience, that leads to significantly better writing, because ultimately writing is just about clarifying our thinking and then putting it down in words. And so if you're being intentional about it, you're going to have clearer thinking and you're going to have better writing.
Yeah, I love that. And you said that in your book. You said writing is just thinking plus typing. I love it. It really is that simple. And it's just it's a matter of the intentionality. I think that's when it starts to kind of separate from just a casual email to like actually writing a really effective experience, because that is part of the user experience. In fact, it's probably one of the most important yet most overlooked parts of the user experience. And when I was reading your book, you also said, you know, can you imagine a digital experience like a website or app with no words? And it's like, geez, that just like removes pretty much most of the experience right there. Yeah. Can you imagine that? It really opened my eyes a lot when I started thinking about that. And then it may, you know, and then my weird brain started going like, well, you know, can you imagine IKEA instructions with words?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and the funny thing is too, like I think IKEA instructions, and then I do quite a bit of Lego building myself, right? And so they have one of my favorite upgrade that's happened since I was a kid is that if you get the Lego instructions now, the very first instruction is that it sort of it visualizes the idea of emptying out the bags on a table, so not your shag carpet, right? So, hey, kid, work on a table.
Not your bearskin rug.
Right, not the bearskin rug. And also to start one bag at a time. So all the bags are numbered now, which is fantastic. Because if you have a piece with like, if you have a set with 1,500 pieces and you open all the bags and dump them together, you're constantly hunting for pieces. But now they have them sectioned. Open bag one, build this. Open bag two, build this. And that's an intentionality of like organizing your inputs and all the pieces that you have to work with and creating an order of operations to get that work done. And writing to me very much feels like, especially in the context of design, writing very much feels like building a model. It feels a lot less like when I sit down to write a song or poetry or a bit of fiction. It feels more like assembling a model. Hmm. Let's get all these pieces laid out in a somewhat sensible order and start to assemble them. And so that is a skill that I think anyone can build, especially as a designer, without having to worry about the writerly parts of it. It's just that intentional thinking.
Hi, I'm Matt Griffin. I try to make things less terrible and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
Wow, that is awesome. I love the Lego analogy and assembling the pieces and assembling the writing. Did you just come up with that, or do you have that in your back pocket?
No, I've investigated this before. It's on my brain a lot.
Nice.
And there's another in my day job life as a content strategist, something I talk about a lot are content ecosystem maps, which are a way of, to a certain extent, doing exactly that, but at the organizational level. So let's figure out what all the pieces are of this thing that is us, including our websites and channels and content types and so on, and arrange them on a canvas into a model that represents today or maybe represents the future. And again, like that, it's a method of just clarifying your thinking that makes doing all the rest of the work easier. And I find that that is helpful at that big meta scale for a big content strategy initiative, like we want to overhaul the website. And I also find it very effective at the micro scale of I need to get the writing done for this screen. And I'm not going to do it by just stubbornly plowing ahead with a blank document, but I'm going to arrange all my pieces, figure out what's true about this, ask myself what my goals are, what am I trying to communicate, maybe create an outline, arrange my messages, and then assemble them. And that's kind of where the rough end comes in, right? You start to assemble all this stuff. And if you get really good at that, in my experience, you find that the quote-unquote writing work is maybe like 5 to 10% of the job. Like, you're not really doing that much writing. It's assembling, trimming, cleaning, organizing, getting things in the right order. And once you've thought through all of that stuff, actually writing the text for what the button does or putting a little bit of microcopy under the form, that stuff almost writes itself once you get your thinking clear enough.
I want to encourage the defenders listening right now, just write. Right. And just begin anywhere. Like Bruce Mao said in his Incomplete Manifesto for Growth, begin anywhere and just start writing and get it all out. And don't edit yourself until later. Like, that is so hard, Scott, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I struggle with it. And I think the workflow model that I recommend in the book, it's a brief book, so I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But there's this idea of preparing first. And I think a useful little trick is to treat that initial generation of text, so dumping it all out there, as you said, writing without editing. I tend to think of that as sort of a preparatory step. That's me generating one more input to work with. If you put the added pressure on yourself of I'm going to try and hit a home run on my first swing. Right. Of like, I'm going to get this perfect and write the good draft, that there's no reason for that pressure. No one's putting that. You're putting that pressure on yourself. You have absolute permission to just write a big, messy lump of nothing, even if it just clears your mental throat and gets you ready to write something good, or if it does end up generating useful text and you can edit it later. But no one's watching. Right, I worry that school has made a lot of people nervous about writing. You know, just you write a history paper that demonstrates your knowledge of some historical event, and someone's in there with a red pen correcting every little grammatical mistake. And it's I don't know that that's doing a service to people, at least in the spirit of making them feel happy and comfortable with the idea of being a writer.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And I think that defenders, when you do that, when you're editing yourself as you go, and if you're like just kind of getting down on yourself because you didn't have the perfect words or phrases right out the gate, like I think you're going to discourage yourself into not wanting to pursue this craft. And so I just really want to encourage you to just go for it. Just go and get it all out and just go and edit yourself later. And the good news is you're not printing this stuff on 10,000 pieces of paper right after you write your first draft. Like, this is a digital medium and we can always iterate, and we can do that in our writing too. So I just really want to encourage you, don't be discouraged by trying to edit yourself to death as you're writing. You know, give yourself space, let yourself just get everything out and think as you type, like Scott encourages us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really big on the idea of a scratch pad, you know, of just having some place that you're not committing to what you write there, and you have permission to be messy.
I love that.
I follow a lot of illustrators on social media because it just it's a fun little community. I doodle from time to time. I don't think of myself as a designer in that sense, but a lot of them do and share their warm-up sketches, right? They just have some piece of legal pad and they draw something silly, or they make an illustration out of the coffee stain that morning, or, you know, a leaf. There's a leaf on their windowsill and they just draw that. And it's it has no purpose other than getting them ready to draw. And I think even writing in a journal, writing an email to a friend, like I find that even if it's not about the assignment, doing any amount of writing before I try and do good writing for a client or for a project I'm working on, it ends up being that much better.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such great advice, Scott. And I think about there's a quote about, we all have good ideas. We just have to get out all the bad ones out first. And I think that we just kind of put too high of an expectation on ourselves quite often. And that's with writing. That's with art, as you mentioned. That's with anything we're doing that we really truly enjoy, that we take seriously. I think we tend to just feel like if I'm good at this, and this is a fixed mindset, defenders. If I'm good at this, if I'm really good at this, I'll just nail it out the gate. Right. It's like that's the John McEnroe mindset where when he messes up, he throws his tennis racket, breaks it, and yells at the ref. Yeah. Right. It's like that's not the way to approach this. And so I really like that feedback. Like and it's a reminder to me, too, to keep my sketch pad. I usually keep my sketch pad in my backpack, and I'm like, I'm a digital guy, you know, and I don't tend to use my sketch pad as much, but I feel like I'm missing out on the opportunity to grow by not getting the rough ends out, so to speak, as well. So that I really like that takeaway a lot, Scott.
Yeah, and just a bit of outboarding. You know, I find like the scratch pad for me at the end of a writing session is, I mean, it seems like some kind of cryptic code. I don't even know why I'm writing down half the things I write down, but it just moving the pen a little, putting a couple of words, a short list together, kind of glancing at that, and then going like, yeah, okay, back to the writing. It's weird. It's like a little bit of a magic trick.
It seems cathartic. It's like kind of that John Nash getting that beautiful mind stuff out, right?
There you go. There you go.
There it is. So, Scott, as we kind of start wrapping up here, you know, in addition to buying your book, which I highly recommend, Defenders, it's so great. And our wonderful friends at A Book Apart are giving us a 10%, I think, off on this, which is really cool. And I'll be sure to mention that in the outro. Highly recommend that. But, Scott, what are some other ways designers can level up their writing skills in addition?
Oh, that's a great question. So, I mentioned this just a moment ago, but I think doing any sort of personal writing can be really helpful for just getting you in the habit, right? So you don't want to feel a lot of inertia when it's time to write, right? It shouldn't feel like a big, scary mode shift, right? Like writing, it should just be a thing that you are used to doing, like making words go even, right? Is just a thing that you should feel comfortable doing. One thing that I find helpful in a lot of ways, but I think in this regard in particular, my personal journal is digital. On my Mac, I use this app called Day One.
Oh yeah.
And there's a quick little key command, and there's a little window off my menu bar, and I can just type anything in there. And, you know, if I just have a fleeting thought where I'm like, I probably shouldn't tweet this, but it's just on my brain, I open it, I type it in there, command return, now it's saved. So I'm just, you know, I have a habit of making words happen on the regular. So I think that's really nice. I think the other, another way to consider it too is that my experience has been that junior designers, especially, like beyond just not writing for their designs, they often try not to do any writing at all. And I think a good place to start leveling up your writing skills is to write about the things that you have designed. So you can do that publicly, like on a blog, right? Of just like write about something that you've learned. But that's a big commitment. Not everyone has the time for that. But I think even in your own design processes, if you are going to send a comp over to someone for review or comments, don't just say, hey, let me know what you think of this, but maybe take a moment and write a paragraph about around what the intent was, what you were trying to accomplish, what went into it, right? Just doing a bit of reflecting and writing about what you've been up to. So there's lots of little moments, I think, in your day that you can start to use words more. And if that becomes just like drawing a little bit every day makes it that much easier, you know, playing an instrument for 5 minutes a day, mm-hmm. when it's finally time to jam with the group, you're that much more competent. I think doing a little bit in those small moments adds up.
Yes. Practice doesn't make perfect, defenders. Perfect practice makes perfect. So there practice what you do, keep going for it, and begin anywhere, and give yourself grace and to grow and room to grow. Scott, what's the best way for the defenders listening to connect and to keep up with you?
Sure. So I try to keep my website up to date. So that's kubi.co. And there's links there to Twitter and the blog that I should update more, but update when I can, because writing's still hard, even for people like me. And I'm on Twitter as @ScottKubi, and there's links there to the book and all that other good stuff.
Defenders, practice what you do. Buy Scott's book. Scott, thank you so much for writing this and for contributing this important message to our community. Last but not least, I just want to say, fight on, my friend. W. Somerset Maugham said, "I write only when inspiration strikes. Fortunately, it strikes every morning at 9 o'clock sharp." My biggest takeaway from my interview with Scott is that there's really two types of writing. There's the automaticity type, where we will write a rote email or the obligatory birthday greeting to a coworker. You know, when those cards go around the office. And even if you had something thoughtful and clever to say besides simply, "Happy birthday, person," you're the last one to receive it, and there's not enough room to say it anyway. I digress. Or there's the intentional craft of writing, where we really pay attention to what we're saying and are thoughtful in how we craft the words, especially as it relates to the goal in which we set out for it. We're always writing. Let's consider flipping that switch on in our brain that says, "I'm not just writing, I'm designing with words meant to communicate something important to the human on the other end, and words that are going to achieve a specific goal." Be sure to check out Scott's book for more on how to do this. Our friends at A Book Apart have generously offered an exclusive Defenders discount of 10% off Writing for Designers using coupon code WFD10. Go to userdefenders.com/WFD and keep in mind this offer expires August 31st, 2019. Tweet your takeaways, defenders. I am @userdefenders and Scott is @ScottKubi. It'd be great to hear what you thought about the episode and also to get the word out to other designer friends that maybe need to hear this information as well. This is the first time I've actually really tackled this topic. And it is an important one, so I'm super glad to have done this today. But yeah, check out UD Community, by the way. It's live and thriving, and you can kick the tires for free for 7 days. See if it's something you're interested in, connecting with other Defender designers like you. There's so much inspiration and passion and hunger for growth happening in there, a lot of connection. It's just a great place to be to grow in your craft. So check it out at community.userdefenders.com. What do improv and UX have in common? Apparently a lot more than we realized. And you'll learn a lot more as I have Mike Gorgon joining me, along with a first-time special co-host, my buddy Frederick Von Weiss from the Thunder Nerds podcast. This was a lot of fun. And that's coming soon. So thanks so much for listening, defenders. I truly and sincerely appreciate you tuning in, and also like all the kind words that you've been saying on Twitter and elsewhere about me and the show. It means a ton, and it never goes to my head, but it really goes straight to my heart and means a lot to me. So if you ever think about it and you're on iTunes and you want to mention that in the reviews,
that would mean a great deal as well, and it would help keep the show in a good position on those channels, so other designers who are looking for this content can find it more easily. So thanks so much in advance for doing that. I appreciate you, and coming back at you soon in a couple weeks here. Until next time, as always, fight on, my friends.